is Love Your Work, and I'm David Cataby. I've spent the past 10 years building my life and work around what I love, and I'm sharing what I'm learning along the way. Many of you have checked out my new book, The Heart to Start. I got tired of hearing the advice, just get started. I wanted to break it down for people. It shows you how to bust through all of the mental distortions and distractions that stand in the way of you getting started. Today, I'm going to share another chapter from the book. This is from chapter 10 of The Heart to Start, and I'm going to tell you about when I got stuck trying to start writing my first book, Designed for Hackers. Our friend Noah Kagan, who you've heard on this show, ended up showing me how I was standing in my own way. You can buy The Heart to Start on Amazon at cataby.net/heart. There is now a paperback version, so if you picked it up on Kindle and want a physical copy, now you can get that. Also, I truly appreciate all of the reviews that have been pouring in on Amazon. Some of them are very touching, really. If you have a moment to simply click on a star rating, you don't even have to write a review, you just have to click on a star rating. Please go to cataby.net/rate and rate The Heart to Start on Amazon. That should take you right to a place that has some stars that you can click on, and that will post your rating of The Heart to Start. This is a huge, huge help if you do this. Go to cataby.net/rate. I know some authors who have gotten publishing deals for self-published books purely based upon the number of Amazon reviews they had. So this really, really helps. Please, please, please rate The Heart to Start on Amazon. Go to cataby.net/rate and click on a star rating. I'm really excited to have Brandfolder as a sponsor. I used to manage the brands at a couple of companies, and I can tell you, it is something that is very, very hard. One of the hardest parts is dealing with all the digital assets to support your brand. Brandfolder provides a single source of truth for all things related to your brand. So your colors, your logos, your fonts, your brand guidelines, everything is all in one place. Everyone on your team will know exactly which assets to use to keep your brand consistent. Discover the power of Brandfolder today by going to brandfolder.com/loveyourwork to unlock the complete potential of all of your brand assets with a free 90-day trial. That's at brandfolder.com/loveyourwork. I also want to thank a couple of new Love Your Work Elite members. They're supporting the show on Patreon. Jana Amonta, I'm sorry, I might be butchering that. And Simon Dowling, I'm fairly certain I might have got that one right. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you would like to vote with your dollars and support Love Your Work's message of a healthy and nourishing definition of success, please go to lywelite.com. That is lywelite.com. Here's the sample chapter. Chapter 10. The linear work distortion. All the best ideas come out of the process. They come out of the work itself. Chuck Close. After I signed my first book deal, I didn't know where to start. I had this great opportunity in front of me and a legal document binding me to a series of deadlines. After writhing in agony in front of my keyboard for a week or two, getting no usable writing done, I did the least logical thing I could have done. I booked a flight to Costa Rica. I had been invited by my friend Noah Kagan, who had been employee number 30 at Facebook, employee number 4 at Mint, which later sold to Intuit for $170 million, and who was now the founder of AppSumo. He and some other entrepreneurs were going on a retreat. They were all at various turning points in their careers, and we're taking time to evaluate one another's directions and decide what to do next. I didn't have any trouble deciding what direction to take. After fleeing Silicon Valley and going through 3 years of experimentation to reach this point, it was clear I wanted to write this book. But I hoped that getting away would give me some clarity and propel me through this crippling creative block. I remember looking at the balance of my bank account, then looking at the price of the plane ticket, over and over for half an hour. I hoped it would be worth it as I grimaced and hit the buy button. It was a strange place for me to be so miserable. Everyone was strewn around the infinity pool amidst the calls of great-tailed grackles and capuchin monkeys. The ocean breeze tempered the warm sun. Chris, Ariel, and Aaron were jumping around in front of a computer playing a workout video. Mike and Matt were discussing a website design on the patio, and I was sitting inside on what would normally be a comfortable couch, trying to write. My agony must have been written on my face, because when Noah stepped into the house with an iced tea, he asked, "Are you okay?" "I'm trying to write this book," I said. "I can't even get started." "What's your plan?" "Well, the book is supposed to be about 55,000 words. I have 5.5 months left, so that's like," I punched some numbers into a calculator app, 333 words a day? "How many words do you have so far?" Zero. Noah lowered his glass and raised his eyebrows. "It's just so overwhelming," I continued. "Each word I write, I think about the million other words in the book that might contradict or repeat it. I've got to make this book happen. I've put everything into this." Noah sat near me on the couch. "What about the blog posts that got you this book deal? Is this how you wrote those? You counted the words and then wrote them?" "No, I guess I just kind of wrote them." "Okay, but what did that look like? What were the steps?" I guess I just kind of barfed them out. Then some time went by and I looked at them again. Then maybe I'd write an outline. Draft, then outline, then what? Then I'd kind of go back over them and smooth them out. Draft, outline, polish. Break down each chapter into those three phases. Divide up your timeline, put it on the calendar, stick to the calendar. You're done. But put it on the calendar. "Okay, dog, you can do this." Noah stood up and walked outside to join the workout session in progress. At first, I was resistant to Noah's advice. He made it sound so simple, as if I could count on making the writing happen on schedule. It wasn't just the words that had to be written. They had to be accompanied by visual examples and illustrations. Trying to break it down into a process felt like a game of whack-a-mole. Every time I tried to put something on the calendar, I'd think of some other detail that would make that timeline impossible or unlikely, or it would open up some other unknown gap that I didn't know how to fill. Then again, it was a better plan than simply writing 333 words per day. So I fought through breaking everything down into steps. I assumed I wouldn't follow it perfectly, but it would serve as a guide. The next day, I sat at a desk on the interior balcony of the house and reviewed my calendar, which now had a series of milestones. I'd start with chapter 3. All I had to do was write whatever I could think of for that chapter. Then a few days later, I'd write an outline for what I had so far. After that, I'd polish it well enough to have a first draft to send to my editor. As I tapped out those first few words on the keyboard, it was clear something had changed. I stopped worrying about how each word might relate to other words in other chapters of the book. Each time I started to worry, I'd remind myself I had an airtight timeline on my calendar. I knew that if I wrote today, I could make that writing better tomorrow, and I'd still be on schedule. I was free to create in the moment. On that balcony, with a view of the Pacific Ocean cheering me on through the wide-open glass doors of the house, I had my first effortless writing session. I had found my place in that book. I finally got started. You might have noticed that my writing process wasn't what you would expect. Growing up, whenever I was assigned writing in English class, I was always paralyzed by being assigned to write an outline before writing a paper. I always wondered, how are you supposed to decide what you're going to say before you actually say it? As I started to write more, I discovered that it worked better for me to write a draft first. Then I'd use that draft to write an outline, and I'd use that outline to write my final draft. It wasn't until I wrote my first book that I realized my teachers had been pushing me into the linear work distortion. It's easy to fall into the trap of expecting creative work to happen linearly, as if writing is as simple as putting one word after another, or as if painting is as simple as putting a brush to canvas. When we try to emulate the great work that inspires us, we follow this false progression and end up frustrated. It keeps us from getting started. The linear work distortion is the false belief that creative work is a neat step-by-step process wherein the final product steadily reveals itself. In fact, that's not how creative work really happens. It's often messy and iterative. John Bokenkamp, creator of NBC's The Blacklist, has a non-linear way of writing scripts. On Love Your Work, he told me that he starts with stream of consciousness writing. I'll open a scratch file, and I'll just type to myself. And I literally will type in everything that comes into my brain. It's kind of a dialogue with myself where I say, all right, what's the scene about? If John comes across a good idea while typing, he types that idea in all caps. I'll end up with 300 pages of that, and I'll print it out and go through and with a highlighter mark the things that are worth keeping. From that, it turns into note cards, and I lay them out on my floor into the three acts of a movie structure. If you were writing a script for the first time, the linear work distortion might make you think that since a script mostly consists of dialogue, you'd better start writing dialogue. But that's not at all how John's process works. The dialogue is the end of the process, he says. It's really about the story. I got to the point where I had my first book deal through a messy process. I simply wrote what came to mind. I'd write stream of consciousness like John Bokenkamp does, then I'd cut it up and polish it into blog posts. It was far from an ideal process, but it did work. As I was sitting uncomfortably on that couch in Costa Rica, I had lost sight of my non-linear process. My first instinct was simply to divide up the length of the book into the time I had to write the book. It took Noah 3 seconds to see that I was falling for the linear work distortion. I had to recognize the process that worked for me and account for that process and how I'd manage the project. As I had expected, I didn't progress neatly from stream of consciousness to outlines to a first draft every step of the way. But knowing that my plan accounted for my non-linear process made me less anxious and freed me up to be creative. As you complete bigger and more sophisticated projects, you'll get to know your process better, and your process may change as a result. In fact, when we watch people with more experience than we have, this is why we fall for the linear work distortion. We expect our process as a beginner to be like the process of a master. One of Picasso's models recalled that, as she stood in her pose, he merely stared at her without drawing a thing. After an hour, he said, "I see what I need to do. You won't have to pose again." The next day, he began a series of paintings of her in that pose, entirely from memory. You could easily hear a story like that and conclude that Picasso was simply a master and that there'd be no use in trying your hand at painting. But you'd be forgetting that Picasso was 65 years old and had been drawing and painting day in and day out for decades at that point. To overcome the linear work distortion, get a feel for your process by creating whatever comes easiest to you. You already know that you should start small, so the fortress fallacy doesn't hold you back. So you should be able to complete smaller projects without getting overwhelmed. As you learn the process that works for you, adapt that process to your plan of execution as you attempt larger projects. If you iterate through the messy process of creating your art, you'll get a clearer picture of where to start new projects. Inevitably, you'll find yourself battling with your internal critic along the way. In the next chapter, we'll learn how to quiet that critic to keep yourself moving. I hope that sample chapter helps you notice when the linear process that you envision for your work stands in your way of getting started. If you enjoyed that, please buy The Heart to Start at katavi.net/heart. If you've already read The Heart to Start, please, please, please click on a star rating at katavi.net/rate. Is Love Your Work helping inspire you to pursue the life and work that you love? If so, I could really use your help. This show takes work and it takes money to make. To keep making the show and to keep it free for everyone, it needs your support. Besides subscribing and reviewing the show, there's one big thing you can do to help, and that is to donate. I work to make this show nourishing and thoughtful. In an economy that's all about grabbing attention, this is not the short route to success. If you believe in Love Your Work's message of living a balanced life and finding fulfilling work, please join Love Your Work Elite, hosted on Patreon. Patreon is a platform that lets you support creators like me, vote with your dollars, and keep Love Your Work going. You're going to get bonus content and a discount on Love Your Work merchandise. Learn more at lywelite.com. That's lywelite.com. Love Your Work is brought to you in part by top Love Your Work elite members, such as Arif Akhtar. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Cadavy. The theme music for this show is At Sea by Durena from the album About Everything and More, by arrangement with Deep Elm Records at deepelm.com. Love Your Work is a production of Cadavy, Inc.